Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. The Humane Society of the United States has filed a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission accusing Neiman Marcus of selling products, three types of boots, advertised as being made of fake fur or faux fur, but actually containing real fur. Now, if you follow the fur labeling issue, you will recall that this is not the first time Neiman Marcus and other big retailers have been called out for such transgressions, and indeed, the Humane Society of the United States has been persistent and aggressive in its work to end deceptive and fraudulent labeling. And imagine how you'd feel if you purchased and had been wearing a garment or boots or carrying a handbag labeled as being composed of synthetic materials, only to learn later that it was not synthetic as advertised, but was indeed from an animal that was horrifically killed to make your garment. Well, personally, it would make me sick and then very angry, and I'd want to learn what I can do to punish the store and the manufacturer for putting me through that. The use of faux fur in fashion is increasing. The quality of the material, I've read, is improving, and a growing number of designers are choosing to use it. And it seems like great numbers of enlightened people are adopting faux fur instead of the animal product. Personally, I'm not a fan of fake fur. It just seems strange to me to want to be reminded about an animal part on my body or on my handbag, but maybe I'm an outlier there. So what's going on in the Humane Society of the United States Neiman Marcus case, and what is the history of false labeling in the fashion industry? Here to delve into this with us is Pierre Grabowski, Policy and Enforcement Manager for the HSUS's Fur Free Campaign. Welcome to the program, Pierre.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pierre, so we know there's a lot of history preceding this current episode, but can you please start with this one? What is the HSUS claiming in this current complaint?
Well, the Humane Society of the United States filed a petition with the Federal Trade Commission. That's the federal agency tasked by Congress with enforcing the Fur Products Labeling Act and generally protecting American consumers from misrepresentation and fraud. We filed a petition with that agency asking for enforcement action against Neiman Marcus, which is the upscale retailer that sells in the United States in a number of brick-and-mortar locations as well as online. The petition asked for enforcement action against Neiman Marcus for selling three different items from November 2014 until March of 2015 that were advertised, all three, as faux fur or fake fur, and all three, when I bought them and looked at them and analyzed them, found them all to be animal fur. One of them actually had a sticker on each of the boots that also said faux fur. So it said faux fur in the ad, faux fur on the actual boots. And then unless you knew how to tell animal fur from fake fur, if you were a consumer, you were stuck thinking you had bought faux fur. Now, luckily, the other two boots that we bought both contained stickers on them that indicated that, contrary to what Neiman Marcus said on their website, they actually contained rabbit fur. And just a preliminary analysis of the fur leads me to believe that it probably is rabbit fur for all three.
Incredible. The HSUS has been following this for a long time, Pierre. How did this first get on their radar screen?
Well, I've been here since 2005, focusing on the fur trade, and I believe it was in November or December of 2006. I mean, we were somewhat aware of the problem of animal fur being misrepresented, and in fact, if you research the history of the fur trade, I wouldn't be surprised if the day after the animal fur trade was commercialized, the first misrepresentation didn't occur. It was actually so bad at the turn of the century in the United States that starting in the 30s and finalizing in 1951, Congress passed the Fur Products Labeling Act, because so many different furriers were misrepresenting animal fur, usually upselling it, including as species that didn't even exist. So the problem was really, really vast in the United States. So that's when the Fur Products Labeling Act was passed. So if you kind of jump forward to when we're looking into the trade a little bit, we actually got a tip that Burlington Coat Factory was going to be coming out with a circular that winter, in December, I believe, of 2006, that had a picture of a garment that contained animal fur but was actually advertised in the circular, and I confirmed on posters in the stores as faux fur, when in fact it was actually animal fur. So we started looking into that, going to the stores and looking, and that was kind of the rabbit hole. And once we started looking, we just fell right down it, and we fell into what is a nationwide problem at retailers of all price points, brick and mortar and online, real fur being sold as faux, as well as real fur being sold unlabeled, which led to us helping to pass the Truth in Fur Labeling Act, which closed that loophole, and also lots of real fur being sold as a different animal than what it actually is. A lot of raccoon dog being sold as raccoon, which is a completely different animal, and that continues to this day. All of that continues to this day.
Okay, so what would be the reason retailers sell real fur and say it's fake?
You know, that's a question I've asked myself a lot. And I think we can't give an answer for any specific instance without talking to everyone involved in the manufacturing and selling of that product and seeing all the paperwork, going all the way back to probably the factory in China. But generally speaking, we think that it's some combination of intentional misrepresentation, especially at the manufacturing level, and then a whole lot of sloppy or non-existent quality control at the retail level. So it's some combination of that and probably some additional factors. But at the end of the day, I came to the conclusion that I really didn't care what the excuses were that the retailers were making.
Yeah.
Their job is to protect their customers from getting something that they didn't want. They should take it upon themselves to make sure that what they're calling something is actually what it is. And what we found is that some companies like Neiman Marcus, a multi-billion dollar revenue company, seems to be either unwilling or unable to stop selling animal fur as faux fur.
Hmm. And you mentioned rabbits. What other animals are we talking about? And where are the garments and products from, Pierre?
Well, animal fur in general, a lot of what we are looking at is trimmed products. So trimmed hoods on jackets, trimmed gloves, trimmed shoes. You're much less likely to see a full fur garment, like a full fur coat, being sold as faux fur, because those are typically sold in fur salons where the people who are selling them are actually, they understand and know fur. And they're going to know what they're selling you for the most part, versus a lot of this that we're seeing is the trims, the trim jackets, the gloves, the boots. Those are being sold at mixed merchandise retailers where the salespeople and the copy editors simply don't know as much about fur as you would get from a fur salon. But that's really no excuse, because, of course, they could always hire a quality control person to be checking all that, which
right.
Many of these companies don't seem to be willing or able to do. But so across the board for fur, it's pretty much any animal that's got animal fur, any animal that's in the wild in the U.S., with the exception of endangered animals, which are not supposed to be caught, foxes, rabbit, mink, beaver, chinchillas are raised. The by and away, the largest animal being raised and killed for fur, mink, that's over half of all the animals raised and killed, and that's primarily for full fur coats. But when we're talking about misrepresented items being sold as faux, a lot of that is rabbit and then probably raccoon dog. I'd say raccoon dog is probably the top item that's being sold as faux fur, and then also rabbit and some other animals like coyote.
So the raccoon dogs, are they raised on farms or are they wild? And in what countries?
Yeah, the raccoon dog was something I actually didn't really know about until 2006. That was one of the first animals that we came across in the misrepresentation investigations that we were doing, and it was being sold a lot as faux fur or raccoon fur or coyote. The raccoon dog is actually a member of the canid or dog family, so it's in the same large taxonomic family as coyotes and foxes and wolves, all the canids for the morphology and placement in that taxonomic family. Those are all considered the dog family. They're the broad term dog, not domestic dog. It's not a domestic dog. It's a wild species. They're indigenous to China, parts of Europe above China. There's also a subspecies in Japan. Now, the ones that are being made into garments are being raised in tiny battery cages. The number one producer of raccoon dog fur is China and probably followed by Finland. And they're being raised in small wire mesh cages like you would see mink or fox. And then they're being killed. There's actually been some documentation of raccoon dogs skinned alive in the production process because they were improperly stunned or killed prior to the skinning process. And there's also anal electrocution that's used, which is also the primary killing method for foxes.
Don't go away. We're learning about issues related to fur labeling. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of new and important issues concerning the welfare and rights of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in society. From whale protectors risking their own lives on the open seas, to lawmakers fighting to pass legislation to assist animals, to kids volunteering at their local shelter, Animals Today provides timely and in-depth analysis and interviews with experts and advocates from around the world. To listen, join us every week on this station, listen on iTunes, or go to animalstodayradio.com, where you can access and listen to all the prior shows. And like us on Facebook and share your views. Much of our financial support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. That's aianimals.org. So check them out. This is Dr. Lori, and thanks for listening.
Here's the problem. How much are those tablets? $500, $600, $1,100? Well, introducing the deal of the week. Here's your chance to get a brand new quad-cord Android tablet, 8 gigabytes Wi-Fi tablet. Listen to this, $79.99. You heard me right, $80. The thing is brand new. Cameras in the front, cameras in the back. It's got 8 gigabytes on board. And listen, you can expand it up to 32 more gigabytes. You can get 40 gigabytes on your tablet. Tablets have revolutionized the world. Everybody loves tablets. This is a state-of-the-art one. It's Bluetooth capable. It's got high-definition speakers. It's expandable. Cameras in the front, cameras in the back. It's the state-of-the-art quad-core tablet. You call 1-888-877-0490. $79.99, $80. Treat yourself. Get the state-of-the-art one right here. We only have 20 of them to go around, so call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. It's an Android tablet. It's 7 inches, 8 gigabyte. Wi-Fi spots everywhere. I gave one to my 76-year-old father. He loves it. He's doing his Sudoku, his Facebook, his emails. He's reading newspapers from the old country, watching videos, listening to music. He's even buying stuff on it. $79.99. The first 20 people to call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. We'll get the deal of the week, a quad-cord Android tablet, 7-inch, 8-gigabyte Wi-Fi tablet for $79.99. Go check it out at mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. $79.99 for a brand-new quad-cord tablet. Be the first 20 to call 1-888-877-0490.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the program. Okay, let's bring everyone, including myself, up to speed on labeling issues related to animal products over the past decade or so. In 2007, the Humane Society of the United States filed a petition to the Federal Trade Commission alleging that several major retailers and fashion designers were manufacturing and selling fur garments that were falsely or misleadingly advertised. Pierre, tell us about that, please.
Right. So, like I mentioned earlier, we started looking closely at the retail industry in December of 2006 based on a tip that there was going to be a jacket sold as faux fur that was actually real. And once we started looking, we just started finding misrepresented and mislabeled animal fur garments everywhere. So we started collecting that evidence, and we put it together into a petition, which is basically it's a legal document that says, FTC, please do something to protect consumers, and here's all the evidence that we've gathered for you, please act on it. So we submitted the evidence we had found to the Federal Trade Commission in 2007. And since then, when we gather evidence, we have submitted several more petitions after that to the Federal Trade Commission, asking them to take action on misrepresented animal products. I think at this point we've submitted three large ones and a number of smaller ones. The most recent multi-retailer one was in 2011, and that had many retailers and many brands. And then we submitted, obviously, just a couple weeks ago, a petition to the Federal Trade Commission asking for enforcement action against Neiman Marcus for selling three different types of boots with animal fur trim that Neiman Marcus's website described erroneously as faux fur.
What was the outcome of the petition in 2007?
Well, unfortunately, we haven't seen as much action by the Federal Trade Commission on our petitions as we would like. There has not, in fact, been a single monetary fine handed out, to our knowledge, by the Federal Trade Commission since we started investigating and submitting petitions to the FTC in 2007. And that's really unfortunate. So the hardest penalty so far by the Federal Trade Commission has been to place three of the retailers that we found selling real fur as faux in 2011 under what's called a consent agreement or a consent order, where the retailers agree that if they sell animal fur as faux again, then they will be held in violation of that consent order and can be fined $16,000 per item per day that the violation occurs. The problem with that is we have found violations by two of those three subsequent to that enforcement order. So clearly that enforcement order or that consent order did not do the job to make these companies take the law and protecting consumers seriously. So we have submitted, actually last year, an earlier petition naming Dr. J's for being in violation of that consent order with a number of items. And now here we are again finding a second of the three bad actors doing the same thing. So we think it's really time for the Federal Trade Commission to step up and hand out some substantial and meaty enforcement penalties so that these notorious bad actors will start following the law.
Should consumers call the FTC to ask them to act?
To be honest, we're not really sure what exactly it's going to take to get the Federal Trade Commission to take this matter seriously. We submitted a number of petitions to them involving many, many items that were sold as faux or as the wrong species to the public. These petitions contain an exhaustive amount of evidence, including very expensive tests conducted by ourselves, which we think that's the job of the Federal Trade Commission. And as a nonprofit, we shouldn't be spending this much money attempting to enforce a law that we actually don't have the ability to enforce. So we're really hoping that the Federal Trade Commission will see this latest petition and decide it's finally time to act on it. And in the meantime, we've taken steps on our own, including filing a lawsuit against a number of retailers in D.C. court in 2008, accusing them of violating the D.C. Consumer Protection Act. And we actually reached settlements with a number of those retailers, and Neiman Marcus was one of the companies that we sued in 2008. And the court entered a judgment against Neiman Marcus, where they were ordered not to violate the law and to pay us a fine or an amount of money to cover costs and expenses for our work on the project.
Now, in 2009, with the assistance of New York Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal, you conducted an undercover investigation looking into fur labeling in New York City. Can you explain a little bit about the background on this? And there's a great video online showing this. Where did that go?
Right. So, Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal is really fantastic. We were trying to close the fur labeling loophole for a number of years at the federal level, which allowed most fur-trimmed jackets and other fur-trimmed items to go unlabeled. So in the interim, we actually were able to help pass a number of state laws that closed that loophole. And Assemblymember Rosenthal was the champion of the successful passage of the one in New York State. And she actually has gone undercover with me twice in her state, in Manhattan. We go in her district and in the area that she represents, checking to see whether or not companies are actually following the law that she helped pass. And unfortunately, we tend to find that is not the case. So again, that's an issue where when we find these violations, we need the law enforcement agencies, both the state and the national level, to take substantial action adequate to get these big retailers to take notice.
Can you review and describe the laws that are in place nationally or in states that regulate this activity, Pierre?
Sure. So the federal law that covers the selling of animal fur products at the retail level is called the Fur Products Labeling Act. Simple enough. That was passed in 1951, and unfortunately it had a loophole in it that allowed, like I mentioned, a lot of the trimmed items to go unlabeled, and we were actually successful in helping to close that, and that was signed into law in 2010 by President Obama, so that now when you go shopping either online or in the store in the United States, any product of wearing apparel, that's anything that covers your body, not handbags, but everything else, gloves, hats, jackets, anything that's got animal fur and covers your body,
yeah,
if it has any amount of animal fur on it, regardless of the amount, it must say so on the label or hang tag. It's got to give the name of the animal, the country in which the animal was killed, which is called the country of origin, and then a few other things like whether or not it was dyed. But we thought that was really important to pass. So at a minimum, if you were opposed to buying or wearing animal fur, as 37% of Americans are, that you could make that decision. Now, there's also state laws that were passed. A couple of them existed prior to us closing a loophole. A couple of them existed prior to us even starting. They were passed, I believe, in the 40s and 50s. And then a number of states we helped pass laws as we were working on the federal law. So there are complementary laws, I believe, in Delaware, New York, I think a couple of others. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on that. But there's a couple of states that have passed their own laws as well. But the federal law covers every shopping experience that you should have in brick-and-mortar stores or online as a United States consumer.
Very good. Pierre Grabowski, we're talking about fur and faux fur. Don't go away. You're listening to Animals Today.
Here's the problem. How much are those tablets? $500, $600, $1,100? Well, introducing the deal of the week. Here's your chance to get a brand new quad-cord Android tablet, 8 gigabytes Wi-Fi tablet. Listen to this, $79.99. You heard me right, $80. The thing is brand new. Cameras in the front, cameras in the back. It's got 8 gigabytes on board. And listen, you can expand it up to 32 more gigabytes. You can get 40 gigabytes on your tablet. Tablets have revolutionized the world. Everybody loves tablets. This is a state-of-the-art one. It's Bluetooth capable. It's got high-definition speakers. It's expandable. Cameras in the front, cameras in the back. It's the state-of-the-art quad-core tablet. You call 1-888-877-0490. $79.99, $80. Treat yourself. Get the state-of-the-art one right here. We only have 20 of them to go around, so call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. It's an Android tablet. It's 7 inches, 8 gigabyte. Wi-Fi spots everywhere. I gave one to my 76-year-old father. He loves it. He's doing his Sudoku, his Facebook, his emails. He's reading newspapers from the old country, watching videos, listening to music. He's even buying stuff on it. $79.99. The first 20 people to call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. We'll get the deal of the week, a quad-core Android tablet, 7-inch, 8-gigabyte Wi-Fi tablet for $79.99. Go check it out at mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. $79.99 for a brand new quad-core tablet. Be the first 20 to call 1-888-877-0490. Attention invention lovers, join our invention testing Da Vinci Club. We're looking for 100 people to receive an invention every single month. You fill out a little questionnaire, you get to keep the invention. We need your input on the newest American invention. Sometimes it's a tablet, sometimes it's a garlic cutter, whatever we get. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Join our Da Vinci Club. MyCoolInventions.com is looking for invention testers, 100 special people who will analyze and look at inventions and give us a little feedback. Call 1-888-877-0490. Go to mycoolinventions.com. Join our Da Vinci Club. Be one of the first 100 invention testers. 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolinventions.com.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS, the solutionist, on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's true reality radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted. One innovation, one inventor, one American.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the program. We're speaking with Pierre Grabowski with the Humane Society of the United States. Let's talk about faux fur, Pierre. Are designers and consumers happy with the product? Can the designers be more creative or accomplish something with faux fur that can't be done with the real fur?
Well, the answer to the first part of the question is yes. And what we're seeing is faux fur has actually improved dramatically in the last 10 or 20 years. And improvements continue to occur as more designers and retailers switch to fake fur rather than animal fur, so they can avoid the cruelty issues involved with animal fur and the misrepresentation issues. So obviously, as there's more money going into the faux fur market, you have more money that can be spent on R&D to make a better product. So if you feel some of the new fake fur, especially the short hair stuff that's coming out now, compared to something like 10 years ago, night and day. Some of the new fake fur feels almost indistinguishable from real rabbit fur. It's really amazing. So we definitely encourage people, consumers, designers, retailers, if you want the look and feel of animal fur, but you want to avoid the cruelty issues, the environmental issues, the misrepresentation issues, then yes, absolutely use faux fur. But the problem is, as more and more people are turning to faux fur because they like the aesthetic, but they want to get away from the cruelty, then you have more people who can be potentially duped by the misrepresentation by companies like Neiman Marcus when they call a product faux fur or fake fur, and it's actually animal fur. So at the end of the day, we tell consumers you got to learn how to tell animal fur from fake fur, and you can do it pretty easily with some tips that we can teach you. That way, when you buy a product that you think is fake fur, just quickly double check it and just be sure you got what you wanted.
Very, very good. So how can a consumer know for sure that a garment contains no fur or no animal products for that matter?
Okay, so we have three tips that we tell people, and the first thing is actually look at the tips. So look at the tips of the animal, of the unknown sample, the unknown fiber. You don't know whether it's fake fur or animal fur. If it's animal hair and it hasn't been sheared, it should taper to a fine point like a cat's whisker or a sewing needle or a sharpened pencil. And obviously you need good eyesight and you need good lighting if you're doing it in the store. And some hairs are so fine it's almost impossible to see them with the naked eye, like chinchilla. But if it's a thick guard hair on like a coyote or a raccoon dog or another animal that has thick guard hairs, you should see with the naked eye very clearly that it tapers to a fine point. So if you see that, that's animal fur.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't, you're not sure because it could have been sheared. Sheared mink is pretty common. And fake fur is actually different types of extruded plastics. And during the extrusion process, they just shear it straight across. So both fake fur and sheared animal fur will look the same if it's cut straight across. So tips, tapering, that's animal fur. If not, you got to do another step. The second step is you want to look and see what the hairs are coming out of, because animal fur is literally an animal skin with the hair still attached. So it should look just like if you look at the hairline of, you know, the person, like, you know, your husband or wife or kid. You're basically looking for that. You're looking for hairs that are going into skin. If you look close enough, you'd actually be able to see the pores. Whereas fake fur is made like carpet. It's got a mesh backing made out of fabric, and then the tufts of synthetic fiber, the acrylic or monocrylic, polyester, nylon, are woven into that, and both ends stick out. So if you push the hairs apart, you should be able to see skin, that's animal fur, or a mesh or fiber backing, and that's fake fur. Now, it's not always easy to tell, especially if it's been dyed. All three of the items in our latest FTC petition regarding Neiman Marcus are dyed black. And what that does is the hairs absorb the dye, but so does the skin. So the contrast between the two is almost zero. So it's really hard to tell the material. Now, obviously, if you own the item, you can pop some stitches and turn it over and look at the exposed backing. But That's a pretty unfair thing to ask a consumer to have to do, because retailers like Neiman Marcus are unwilling or unable to stop misrepresenting animal fur as faux. Now the third test is, now this is only for adults, and you absolutely cannot do this in the store. This is only if you own the product. You basically pluck a few of the fibers, your unknown sample, and then you carefully move them over to an area where there's nothing else flammable around, like over a plate or a table, hold them with a pair of tweezers, light them with a cigarette lighter, because that's odorless, unlike matches. Blow it out and you smell it. And if it smells like burning human hair, that's animal hair. Hmm. If it smells like different types of burning plastic, and each of the different plastics smells differently, that's fake fur. So obviously this is only for adults. Very careful adults at that, and don't do it in the store unless you want to get a free trip downtown.
Understood. Those were great tips. Thank you, Pierre. Are there any retailers or stores that people can rely upon that have perfect track records in providing cruelty-free products, or at the very least, completely reliable labeling?
Well, you know, I'm hesitant to ever say that because retailers change so often, and there's so much turnover among the executives and other people, and even companies with good intentions will occasionally have products slip into the supply chain and not get caught. But we do have a list of fur-free retailers and designers and brands on our website. It's humanesociety.org/fur-free. And you can find a list of companies that have pledged to stop selling fur. So that's a good place to start. Of course, you always double-check everything just to be sure. And then we have two companies that we actually work closely with, and they're both run by animal advocates. It's Donna Sayers, Fabulous Furs, and then Imposter by Jacqueline Sharp. And those are both faux fur companies run by animal advocates. So those are companies you can be pretty solidly confident in. For everyone else, the companies that are fur-free, I always encourage you just to double-check. It's better to be safe than sorry.
Pierre, you heard my introduction, and you know how shocked and distraught I would be if I was deceived and purchased a product containing animal fur when I thought it was faux fur. What recourse would I have?
That's an interesting question. Well, if you bought a product that was sold as fake fur, either online or in store, or the salesperson misrepresented it to you, you could take action at the federal level by filing a consumer complaint with the Federal Trade Commission. You could take action at the state level by contacting the state's Attorney General's office, and that's the head law enforcement agency in each state. And of course, you can contact us, and we can look into it. It's fur-free at humanesociety.org, and we can take a look at it. You can also contact the company. You can contact the media, too. We find that some of the less reputable companies will try to sweep these sorts of things under the rug, and that it's better to make sure that a third party knows so that they're held accountable.
Pierre, what issues are on the horizon?
China's economic growth has been pretty substantial, to say, to put it mildly, over the past 20 years. And that's led to a lot of fur consumption by the many, many nouveau riches in China. But we think that's starting to finally taper down due to a crackdown on corruption and graft in China by the top officials. It's our understanding that a substantial amount of the animal fur that was being purchased and sold in China was being used as gifts to local politicians to help grease the wheels on various projects. So we're hopeful that the Chinese consumption will start going down, and that will help animals nationwide, because it's obviously a very large country, and even a small percentage of growth there can lead to the growth of production. Other than that, I mean, I think consumers need to be aware that animal fur continues to be sold as fake fur, probably everywhere, certainly in the United States. Animal fur is being sold as the wrong species. Right now, bobcats continue to be killed for their pelts. They continue to demand a very high price for their pelts, and that's happened in the United States. And also, something a lot of people don't know is that the United States is probably the number one trapping country in the world. We trap millions of animals for the fur trade every year. So along with the vast amount of suffering and death that goes into that the animals in the United States experience in traps, there's also quite a substantial amount or number of domestic dogs and cats who were injured or killed each year in these traps. And that's something a lot of people don't know, is that whenever you set a trap in the woods, that's an inanimate object. It doesn't know what it's clamping shut on. So anything that triggers it is going to trigger it, whether that be a coyote or a domestic dog. So I really wish that I could get any potential fur buyer to think about whether or not they would be okay with their dog being accidentally killed in a trap so that they can wear an unnecessary trim on their jacket.
Pierre Grabowski, thank you for providing your expertise, and thanks to Humane Society of the United States for actively pursuing this important issue.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows and where you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com, or you can listen on iTunes. Also, make sure to like us on Facebook and join the discussion. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animals, how we treat them, and their place in society, while promoting greater respect and kindness towards them. So thanks for your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
This is Dave Shistokas with some very important information for business owners and nonprofit managers in the U.S. Gulf Coast area. Were you in operation at the time of the BP oil spill in April 2010? There's a very short period until June 8th to file a claim in the BP settlement. There are misunderstandings about the settlement. Organizations located well inland, unrelated to tourism or hospitality, are eligible, and there's no need to show that the oil spill was related to their damages. There's no dollar limits on claims to be paid under the settlement. BP is legally bound to pay all valid claims. Call me, Dave Shistokas, for a free evaluation of your potential claim at 312-451-5550. Any claim not filed by June 8th will be gone forever. There's no cost to find out about your eligibility at 312-451-5550 or visit shistokas.com for more. It's S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S.com. It takes time to properly prepare a claim, so quick action is critical.
Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains. This will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil. Oil from the skin of a banana. Biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated. Each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Attention invention lovers, join our invention testing Da Vinci Club. We're looking for 100 people to receive an invention every single month. You fill out a little questionnaire, you get to keep the invention. We need your input on the newest American invention. Sometimes it's a tablet, sometimes it's a garlic cutter, whatever we get. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Join our Da Vinci Club. MyCoolInventions.com is looking for invention testers, 100 special people who will analyze and look at inventions and give us a little feedback. Call 1-888-877-0490. Go to MyCoolInventions.com. Join our Da Vinci Club. Be one of the first 100 invention testers, 1-888-877-0490, or go to MyCoolInventions.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Well, I'd have to say the biggest animal story or news item of last week was the greatest show on earth, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus, announcing they will go on without the use of elephants by 2018. Well, it's about time. After 145 years of featuring elephants in its circus acts, it's about time. My next question would be, why does it take 3 more years to remove the elephants from the show? Okay, so what sparked this announcement? Well, I think they were really starting to feel the heat, not only from animal rights activists, but from the general public as well. I mean, look, whether it's horse and greyhound racing, rodeos, cockfighting, or even roadside zoos, animals are abused and exploited in a variety of ways for human amusement. And I think one area in particular, we're starting to see an increased public awareness that using animals as entertainers is a bad idea, is in the circus. More people are realizing these wild animals are removed from their natural environment, separated from their families, kept chained or caged in small enclosures, are forced to endure cruel training methods, and are made to perform unnatural tricks for the spectators. We know wild animals jumping through hoops of fire or standing on their heads only perform because of cruel and punishing training methods. When parents take their kids to the circus, they indirectly send them the message that animals are props to be used, and that it's okay to ignore any pain and suffering that the animals might be experiencing. The children learn that animals exist for our amusement. More and more families understand this and do not want to instill these ideas in the minds of our children. And the evidence of this awareness comes from around the world. Many countries have banned the use of animals in circuses, and in the U.S. there are numerous partial or full bans on circus animals. So going back to the Ringling Brothers news, many animal rights groups are taking credit for generating this public concern that forced Ringling Brothers to make this announcement. And I think they deserve this credit. I mean, for years, activists have been saying the use of performing animals is unnecessary and cruel. And for years, animal rights groups have protested Ringling Brothers' cruelty to the elephants. Kenneth Feld, whose father bought the circus in 1967 and who now runs Feld Enterprises, insisted that animal rights activists weren't responsible for their decision and told the Associated Press, "We're not reacting to our critics. We're creating the greatest resource for the preservation of the Asian elephant," which I find very funny that he's implying that their decision is based in concerns for conservation. But interestingly, Alana Feld, the company's executive vice president, stated, quote, "There's been somewhat of a mood shift among our consumers. A lot of people aren't comfortable with us touring with our elephants." So there seems to be a different stance within the company as to why they are making this move. And look, just look around what's happening around us. Los Angeles prohibited the use of bull hooks by elephant trainers and handlers last April. And in Oakland, California, they passed a similar ban last December. So bull hooks, you might know, are these rods with solid steel pointed ends specifically designed to inflict pain on the animal and are used to force the animal to do what the trainer wants them to do. Now, since bullhooks are needed to control and train performing elephants, banning them essentially means banning performing elephants. So Ringling Brothers, which normally performs annually in these two cities, L.A. and Oakland, will have to do their yearly show without elephants or simply go elsewhere. Similarly, Austin, Texas, and Richmond, Virginia, are in the process of drafting similar bans. And as I mentioned earlier, many countries have banned the use of animals in circuses, and in the U.S., there are 49 partial or full bans on circus animals in municipalities in 22 states. And Feld acknowledged that because so many cities and counties have passed these sorts of bans, it's difficult to organize the routine annual tours. And he stated, fighting legislation in each jurisdiction is expensive. Now, you know there are numerous wonderful entertaining circuses that do not use animals. I mean, there's a long list of cruelty-free circuses you could just see by Googling cruelty-free or animal-free circuses. For example, Ringling's popular Canada-based competitor, Cirque du Soleil, doesn't use wild animals and only features human acts. So this is great news and a step in the right direction for our elephants. However, this does not mean we should all be running out to see a Ringling Brothers show. The company's press release said that, quote, the circus will continue to feature other extraordinary animal performers, including tigers, lions, horses, dogs, and camels. Replacing one animal act for another is not eliminating animal exploitation and cruelty. I mean, a person abusing dogs and cats announces he will no longer be abusing dogs. Well, that's great news for the dogs. So again, we should be feeling happy for these elephants. They will retire from the circus, and no doubt these elephants taken out of the show will now live a more peaceful life. And the animal rights community should be celebrating this announcement, and they should be proud of their efforts because this is happening because of them. But don't think for a minute that Ringling Brothers is now eliminating or even reducing the animal suffering, because they're not. So Ringling Brothers, this is a good start, and your announcement will unfortunately improve your plummeting public image. But we, the people who care about the well-being of animals, want to know, how about all the other wild animals exploited and abused by you? The use of any animal in the circus is cruel and unnecessary, and as long as they're going to continue to exploit animals, please, please do not support them. Do not support this kind of animal cruelty by attending their shows. Wild animals belong in the wild. They don't belong in your home. They don't belong behind a cage in a zoo. And they certainly don't want to be forced to perform silly tricks for you. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet. The Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.